improved on his self-image, he never had done it before. And so he did. It just works, that's what I'm trying to tell you. It's practical, down to earth, usable. All right, we can change that self-image, we can change that performance. I'm going to use a lot of fields right now and try to get you ready to accept what I have to say at 4 o'clock and also do you some good, I hope, while we're here right now, talking with each other. When I go to the field of sports and movies, music, medicine, whatever we have time for here, to show you how that if we change this attitude, it will change our altitude. It will change our self-image, it will change our performance. I was telling some fellows on the plane coming up here about an old patient. Can you give me the name of the man? I have it in my notes at home, but I just read about him this last week. Some of you know him because he has made more money in the bowling league than any other living man, so some of you know who I'm talking about now. I don't. But somebody asked him, how'd you get so good? Man, he just don't ever miss. He says, one strike, I don't ever hit it. Well, he said, I never did miss a thing. Both. You mean when you hit him, he strike out, he says, that's right. How on earth? Why, he said, listen. He said, when I was a little boy, my daddy had me a bowling ball made big enough for a little boy's hand. And Dad made me some little pins. And Dad took me down to the bowling alley. And he knew that as little as I was, I couldn't possibly roll that ball down the alley all the way. That it'd be in the gutter. So he said, Daddy said all the pins have been good. Never missed them. I had never heard anything like that before in my life. He's doing it for his self-image. He's not 2 years old. Man, he rolls that ball off in the gutter it goes. But he got all the pins set in the gutter so he can get a strike. Sure, everything. And then Larry got the word that he could get his foot down the alley. Daddy always down there set pins right in front of the ball. Man, what a terrific self-image he had of himself. No wonder he's such a terrific boat. He don't know how to miss. No, Dad don't move him for him now. But then has to now, you see. Because Daddy changed his attitude. He got to believing that he could. Well, Proverbs 23, verse 7. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. Oh, that old mind has so much power over this old body. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. You watch the weightlifters on TV. That old boy bends over there and he picks up, he gets a hold of it, but then they can tell what? He's psyching himself up. He's mentally seeing himself come up with a 550 pounds. And he goes through it 3 or 4 times in his mind before he goes through it actually, physically. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. And if he stood there and he thought, oh, I'm going to drop this thing, you sure as everything. What's going to happen? He's going to drop it, you sure as everything. And that's what the Bible has taught us all along. Now, a fellow went to the Olympics in Berlin, Germany, 1936. If you've seen on commercials every once in a while, American Express commercials, Jesse Owens. Jesse Owens, when he was in junior high, was a sick, spindly, little old, sickly black kid. Charlie Parrott, who at that time was known as the world's fastest man, came and made a talk. And Jesse Owens says, do you think that I could ever make a good athlete? Charlie Parrott says, son, you can do anything that you want to do. Now here is attitude and altitude. 1936, Jesse Owens won 4 gold medals at the Berlin Olympics. Some of us can remember that. Some of us can remember Adolf Hitler refusing to give him a gold medal because his face was black. And that record that he set in 1936 in the broad jump stood for 20 years. Here's a little sickly kid. Somebody changed his self-image and changed his performance. I just mentioned him because he's so well known because of the TV commercial that I mentioned just a while ago. There are a lot of others. You ever heard of a fellow named Bob Pettit? Bob was a great big giant of a boy, 5 feet 6 inches tall, weighed 145 pounds in junior high. He decided that he'd play football. 5.5 feet high, 145 pounds. He was a second string tackle. Now, the only reason he wasn't a third string tackle was they didn't have enough boys in the school. So he's a second string tackle. They're out here playing a crucial game. And the tackle gets hurt. The coach has got to put Bob Pettit in. Boy, when the other team saw this little old skinny kid coming in, 145 pounds, they said, we're going to run on that side. They did. They ran right over him. They ran 67 yards for a touchdown and won this crucial game. Bob Pettit says, well, football must not be my game. He said, I'm going to try baseball. And for his friend, second base, it was a critical game here. The bases were loaded and a ball came zipping right through where Bob Pettit should have been. And he missed it. The opposing team made two runs and they won that game. And he said, well, football's not my game, baseball's not my game. I'm going to come out for basketball. And so they went out to come out for basketball. 18 boys came out for basketball. There were 5 of them who didn't make the team. Bob Pettit was one of them. 5 out of 18 didn't make the team. Well, they heard that there was a church in town that had a basketball team. And so these 5 boys went out there, and they got on this church basketball team. Bob Pettit went home, got him a coat hanger, straightened the thing out, nailed it up on the side of the house, didn't have a basketball. Tennis balls, rocks, clods, wadded up paper, anything can interest him. He shot the goal. He's improving his self-image here. He's getting ready to be the captain of Louisiana State University basketball team that won several championships, and then he went into pro ball, and his record still stands. He made more points in pro basketball than any human being in the history of the world, over 20,000. His attitude. Oh, it's an easy give up, wouldn't it? His attitude determined his altitude. Does it in sports, it does it in most anything. Let's put another fellow in here. His name is Hayes Jones, and at the time I'm talking to you, he was the world's fastest 110-yard high hurdler. Hayes Jones, high hurdler. He won several gold medals in the 64 Olympics, but he worked out 3 hours every day. 3 hours every day for 4 years. 1960-1964. Most of us don't have that kind of attitude, do we? So it's a little sloppy on Sunday morning, kind of hard to get out to Sunday school, isn't it? But his attitude determined his altitude. I'm going to mention another one here because this just happened recently and I cut a piece out of... Well, let's see. Last Sunday's Dallas Times Herald. Well, right up the front, I recognize the picture of Lee Trevino there. Lee Trevino used to caddy. He and his mother lived on a shack of a house. And Lee would tell his mother, Mother, I am going to be a great golf player, and I am going to make a lot of money, and I'm going to build you a nice house. A little article says that last Sunday, that he won the tournament, $72,000. That's last Sunday. And he says, whereas I was a poor Mexican, now I am a rich Spaniard. It was his attitude. Mother, I'm going to do it. Now, boy, we're going to get this attitude for this phone winning business here. Try to get to that in a minute. I'm trying to get you to thinking that way. Just making a case right now. We'll start filling on it here. 4 o'clock. Here's another picture. I cut this one out of the Honolulu Advertiser. And a picture of a girl named Rosanne Laflamme. She's from French-speaking Quebec, Canada. At age 3, this woman got tangled up in a mowing machine. Her father was a farmer and cut off both of her legs and one of her arms at age 3. It says here that she has won over 70 athletic medals. 70. As a matter of fact, the judge is now in downhill ski racing. They don't even think she's handicapped. And not only in ski racing, but she's won 70 medals in skiing, in the javelin, shot put, discus, and other athletic awards. By the way, she's written a book, translated into English. It's Only One Limb, But a Will of Iron. Her attitude determined her altitude. Well, let's move another here. We've mentioned Roseanne. Let me tell you about a fellow named Alan Bellamy. Some of you folks here from Arkansas. Some of you here might be from Pine Bluff. If so, you know Alan Bellamy. Probably met him personally. Came back from Korea. His mother and father was dead, and his mother lived in a house, I understand, with a dirt floor. She had a little mom and pop type grocery store. Dad's dead. Alan came back from Korea and decided that they'd build a supermarket. Went down to the bank, borrowed $90,000 to build the first supermarket in Pine Bluff, Arkansas. Opening day was a day that's worse than today. They didn't have the parking lot paved, it's pouring down rain, but it was a great success, great success. Man, things are going along real good. And then somebody in a chain of these stores decided, Pine Bluff, the place to put a supermarket. Within a year, 10 supermarkets opened there. And every time one would open, Allen would lose some of his business. He had finally got out of where he was selling less groceries each day than he used to in the little mom-and-pop neighborhood grocery store. There was a Dale Carnegie store over in Little Rock. Allen picked out some of his choice employees, and they started driving back and forth over to Little Rock. The night that they got on that lesson on enthusiasm, oh boy, driving home, that car just barely hit the top of the hill between Little Rock and Pine Bluff. These employees just couldn't wait for that store to open the next morning. They greeted every customer like he was a king. They treated everyone enthusiastic, and it wasn't long until these other stores began to close up. Now, the last account I had, which was about a year ago, Allen Bellamy owned 23 supermarkets and had a gross income of $46 million a year. Attitude determines altitude. We get over to a fellow named Bob Richards. Ever heard of him? He's a man who believes in God, believes that Jesus Christ is his son. And he's making a speech to some junior high students. And he's telling them, teaching you anything at all that you want to do. Oh, man. There was a couple listening to him. One of them I've already mentioned, named Lee Trevino. Don't say about the other. That was a little old short gal about that high. About 100 pounds overweight and with thick lens glasses. And she just, oh, she's just so excited. Because he told her that she could do anything in the world. And when that was a speech, she came up to him and said, I'm going to be a tennis star. You think I can make it? I don't know what he thought because it's not recorded. But her name was Billie Jean King. Now, brother, if I haven't got you so many kids, I don't know if I can or not. Why are you trying out all of these things? Have you ever read Luke 16, verse 8, where Jesus said the children of this own world are wiser than the children of light? Let's take these Bible principles and do the things with 10,000 others I could have mentioned if time would permit. And God's children come around. We can't do it. We'll get more on that in the 4 o'clock session while we can't get these things done. Jack Howes, heard of him? Yeah, most of you have. A lot of you know him. A lot of you have seen him. I haven't. I've heard him by tape. Had a daddy who was a professional wrestler and drunkard. Beat him up downtown, New Year's Eve, 1942, Dallas, right downtown by where the Adolphus Hotel is, in the Baker Hotel. His daddy didn't want him to be a preacher. Jack was thinly and nervous from a broken home, only child. He tried sports and he come home and said, Mama, I can't play tennis. Mama, I can't play basketball. Mama, I can't play this, that, and the other. And his mother, a very wise woman, says, Jack, I can is what makes a great man. Quit. Oh, Mama. I can is what makes a great man. Say it. He said, I can is what makes a great man. She said, I didn't say it like that. Say it like you mean it. I can makes a great man. She said, say it again. I can makes a great man. She said, just say it like you mean it. He said, I can makes a great man. Now, when his daddy stomped in downtown Dallas, New Year's Eve, 1942, he said, son, if you're going to preach, preach for the biggest blankety-blank church in the world. 3 years ago, when they had over 100,000 in Sunday school, Jack Howes took his daddy's picture out of his billfold. His daddy's dead now. He said, Dad, wherever you are, I made it. I made it. We don't pay the price, do we? It's too rough! You ever heard of Curtis Harrison? I married Curtis at sunrise one morning to a lovely little girl. 10 years I'm lost track of Curtis. 10 years ago, maybe, I received a call from his brother. Ned Curtis has been in mission work over in Guinea, at least in that section of the world. He's had to come home. He has a tumor of the spinal column, and he's in the mental hospital of Texas. If you ever get up that way, it's doing the world good if you drop by and see him. So as soon as I could arrange my schedule, I was in Methodist Hospital in Lowell, Texas, went into Kirsten's room. The story is simply this. He began to feel a numbness in his legs and numbness in his arms, went to the best medical facilities that they had, and they told him that unless he got some medical care and some of the best in the world, pretty quick that he's going to be paralyzed from the neck down. So they brought him to this country. The doctors found out that this tumor in his spinal column was very rare. Only rose in spinal columns, intermeshed, intertwined. They told him that surgery was the only thing, the only way, and there wasn't much hope that he might end up completely paralyzed. He said, operate. They operated, and he was completely paralyzed. And then he kept working with his hands. He got to where he could work them just a little. And by the time I went to see him, he could move his fingers just a little bit. He's so proud of it. Well, you ain't talking about himself. No, you're talking about the mission work. Papua New Guinea. And about the converts that we're making over there. Couldn't move a muscle from the neck down. Over $37,000 hospital bill. Gleam in his eye. And he said, Brother Nick, I am going back to New Guinea. You know where he is today? You know that, I'm not sure. He's in New Guinea. And he's preaching the gospel there. And he can't get up. In a senior position, somebody has to help him up, but then he can mobilize. Your attitude determines your altitude. And I can give you dozens of cases, such as Edward Otis coming in for the next speaker here. And so I will mention one other fellow here that to me is terrific. His name is Joe, and this illustrates this attitude. Joe, I'm just going to call him Joe the Italian. I'll tell you where you can find the rest of the story as I close here in a minute. Joe was raised in the Bronx. He had a father who used to tie him to a post in the basement and whip him, and his daddy used to tell him, Joe, you are no good, you'll never be any good, you're going to end up in jail. As a man thinks in his heart, so is it. His dad got him to believe in it, he was no good. He joined the gang, he ended up in jail. After he got out of jail, he met and married a wonderful young lady. Three or four children. Four comes in one day, a process server, knocking on the front door, coming to repossess furniture, car, or something. He slips in the back door. His wife says, Joe, there's not a bit of food in the house for the kids. Not a bit. I have no money. The children are hungry. They have already repossessed either car or furniture, and the man's waiting out there to get the other. Joe, I love you, but what are we going to do? And his attitude changed. He said, I've wasted my life up till now. 27 years old. He said, I'm going to go down and get a job. It's just between Christmas and New Year. He went down to the Chevrolet dealer. Asked for a job selling cars. He said, let you sell cars on commission. No salary. Nobody buys cars in between Christmas and New Year. Joe started calling everybody in the phone booth that he knew. Nobody's in. 20 minutes until closing time, a fellow he called walked in. Joe sold him his first car. Joe asked for his commission because his kids were hungry. And he told his boss, and the boss was glad to give it to him. Now, if you want to read the rest of the story, you find it in Guinness World Book of Records because he became the world's champion car salesman. Why? He changed his attitude. Changed his attitude. That's why. Now, brethren, if we're ever going to get anything done like the Lord intended for us to, we as individuals are going to have to be sure that our attitudes are right. And that's what our next session is about as we talk about in pursuit of excellence. Our Father and our God, you've blessed us so richly, and we've done so little. And Father, so many of us don't even realize how little we've done. And we marvel at your patience and your love and your kindness. Forgive us, O God. And please help us to get our attitudes right. Help us to get our lives in harmony with your will. Help us to get our minds enmeshed with your mind. And help us to let the mind which was in Christ be in us also. For it's in his name that we pray. Amen. I'll announce again, since several have come in, that I will begin speaking at 4:00 promptly.
on the pursuit of excellence, and I will stop at 4:30 promptly, and y'all can do whatever you want to, but I gotta go home.
I'm going to go to the hospital. and sit here and watch the house. And not too long ago, we had a little nap. And then that was it. And then we had a little nap. 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 And then we had a little nap.